The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. There was a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. When the wine ran short, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servers, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for Jewish ceremonial washings, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told them, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it. And when the head waiter tasted the water that had become wine, without knowing where it came from, although the servers who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves good wine first, and then, when people have drunk freely, an inferior one. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this as the beginning of his signs at Cana in Galilee, and so revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord.
Yeah, if you're anything like me, you're kind of busy with some calculations right now. You know, I don't know. I hope you're not like me, but there were 6 stone water jars there, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. It's quite a lot of water. Jesus likes to party. Okay, this is the theme of the gospel. Jesus likes the party. And of course, these people knew how to party. You know, we can barely kind of eke out one evening for a wedding celebration. These guys just went for days. But even going for days and providing for, I don't know, all the people who were invited to this wedding, Jesus's action here produces, at least by my calculation, something north of 800 bottles of wine. Yeah? It's a lot. I don't touch this stuff. It gives me a headache. But that's a lot. I mean, over 800 bottles of wine. It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. And you know what? This is part of our digestion of the passage, or part of the, you know, what's meant to strike us is that very thing. This is superabundance. Right? It goes beyond what is sufficient. It's you might say it's superfluous. Right? It's difficult because you realize like what I'm trying to do there is prod and pry a little bit into the theological reality of grace and God's gift. So in one, say, very particular way, and can I say, like, put the frame on. This is actually an Epiphany theme. So then the church has given it to us to extend the Christmas season just a little bit more. And I think also we see, if we want to have like a good kind of tight, say, lens, an interpretive lens on this, it's these 7 works, these 7 mighty works that Jesus does, these 7 signs that he performs that are signs of heaven coming to earth. They're signs of God showing up on the scene in and as Jesus of Nazareth. And they culminate, and all of this is here for us, they culminate in his hour, when Jesus' hour has come. And actually, in the Gospel of John, we've got a lot of clues that point us to what this all means, what the culmination is, and the rest. Because Mary only appears twice in John's Gospel, once here, and once at the foot of the cross. Which, if we've if we tack along with John, if we follow him well, then we're going to see that that's the seventh of seven signs, the revelation of the glory of God in this weak, beaten up, unjustly executed man. It's the revelation of the glory of God. This is the first, and that's the seventh. How do we hold those together? Yeah, but I want to offer a word that goes in a little bit different direction than I'm proposing there. That's work for us to do. We want to read the Gospel of John. We should want to read the Gospel of John and see how that course is charted and what it means. But here what we have is, like I said, the superabundance, certainly. Superfluous? I'm not sure. Because what we see here, before we get to, the explosion of the gift of God in the 800 plus bottles of wine that Jesus, the best wine that anyone's ever tasted, by the way, right? But before we get to that, we have a couple of things, a couple of steps that we're taking immediately prior to that, that are very important, I think, for us. You know, one is that the couple runs out of wine. And it's a tragedy. I know it sounds a little bit frivolous for us to say that, but they're meant to be providing for this party that goes on for days. And believe it or not, the celebration will be cut short if they run out of wine. Okay, so let's take that for granted. The celebration will be cut short. And disgrace will be heaped upon them as a young married couple for their failure to provide for their guests. It's exactly the wrong foot to set out on. And they would not want anything to do with it. But think about it. It's a personal and social and kind of cultural failing. It's a personal, I don't know how to say. I don't know. It's their. In the grand scheme of things, it's a small problem. Even though it's a big problem for their newly married life and the rest. And for Jesus to be in this space at this time, I think is quite remarkable. Also for not just his response to the unfolding personal and social tragedy of this little event, but also Mary's sensitivity to what's going on. Right? And we see this throughout the Gospels. The people who are closest to Jesus are most sensitive to the needs of the people around them. And Mary is right there, here, setting the stage in that sense. And Jesus, although he doesn't seem too eager to respond, having the need pointed out to him, he's there at hand to open up, you know, a new dimension of possibilities. Now, we miss a little bit in the gospel, because John himself gives commentary that this happens on the third day. Of course, happening on the third day is the same language that we're all going to use for the resurrection, the power of the new creation unleashed on earth. And this is a foretaste of that. But Jesus enters this realm of new possibilities, and how is it opened up? Right? How is this dead-end street overcome? By Mary's instruction to the servants. Do whatever he tells you. And as they, we could say, like, they're kind of minor characters on the scene, but it's there, the servants, doing whatever Jesus tells them, that opens up this world of new possibilities. That opens up the possibility of God not only filling, but flooding the world with his love, with his grace, with his mercy, with his compassion. I mean, see how crazy that is. It's like, it's a deed of compassion on Jesus' part. Like I said, right, it's a personal and social tragedy for that couple. But he will be there to provide the way through with the grace of God. And I think that part alone is important for us to reflect on. And I think we can do it kind of from front to back and back to front. But I think the reflection is this, that we might find ourselves in situations. Again, if you're anything like me, right, you find yourself in situations where it just seems like a dead-end street. It's like, where is this going? How can I get beyond this? There's no end in sight to this particular problem. How do I handle it? How do I move forward with courage and grace and strength? Like, handle myself with grace in a very challenging situation that has no end in sight. And all I see in those times, at least a lot of what I experience, is kind of the walls closing in on me. And my possibilities, what I can possibly do in those situations seem to be restrictive, or I don't have the imagination to see beyond myself. But it's then turning to Jesus, being docile to his instruction, being obedient, right, being eager to hear him and do whatever he tells me, that a new way opens up in front of me, even if I don't see it at the time. And trusting and following him step by step, I find myself in that realm of new possibilities. Love is leading the way. And I won't say that all the issues are resolved like that, but I have confidence, I have hope, I have strength that God, in fact, is making the way. And I find that as I live into that, then I'm provided for more richly than I could have even asked. And this then is the superabundance of God's own life of love poured out for us, and that we have access to if we trust Jesus, if we heed Mary's command to do whatever he tells us. Then we have that. We have that available to us. And of course, here in the scriptures, the greater context of what's going on is that Jesus is providing for the renewal of Israel, and so the restoration of all the entire world. And it happens here from within Israel. It's their purification. It's the stone jars that are intended for the purification. But it goes far beyond that in Jesus' own mission, his life, his death, and his resurrection. Israel is purified. Israel is renewed as a people, renewed to the call. And we participate in the renewal of Israel because we've responded to Jesus' call to be members of his new Israel. We're renewed in our relationship with God in order to bring God's love to life where we are. And when we set foot on that journey, then we will find that the strength that God provides us goes beyond, again, what we can ask or imagine. Because it doesn't simply meet a need. It goes beyond that. God's love, yeah, in this sense, God's love is always unmerited, undeserved, right? We can't do anything to deserve God's love. It's given to us freely, and it's given to us without limit. We receive it according to our capacity, but receiving it according to our capacity and bringing it to life for the people that God entrusts to our care, we find his love increase in us, multiply in us, right? Become this superabundant source in us and through the work that God entrusts to us. So this is it's a great passage for our orientation as Christians, for our lives as Christians. And that's what we want to say. Really, two things. One, we don't give up. We don't give up. We always have hope. Whenever Jesus is on the scene, we have hope. And I would say, like, if our hope falters, we need to go out in search of Jesus. Because if he's on the scene, if we've allowed him to be on the scene, if he's at the center of the action, as he should be, then we will have hope. Yeah, so we will never find ourselves in a situation that lacks for hope if Jesus is on the scene. So that's number one. And the second thing to remember is that the whole scene turns on the servers and Mary's instruction to them. Do whatever he tells you. If we do whatever Jesus tells us, then that realm of new possibilities opens up. We get to participate in the creative force that is God's own life of love. And he will then not only lead us and guide us and direct us and instruct us to participate in this new life, he will also breathe it into us. He will nourish and sustain us as we seek to persevere in the life of love that he has called us to. We will live it by faith, by entrusting ourselves to Jesus, who again not only leads the way, but nourishes and sustains us on that same way.